Well, good morning, church, or almost afternoon. Y'all give it up for the band. It's been an incredible morning of worship so far. We're excited you guys are here with us this morning. My name is Lucas Ashley. I'm the student pastor along with my wife here at Just Metro Church. We've been here for 4 years now. Seems longer, seems shorter. It's all a good thing, I promise. We got here May 4 years ago, and it's been an incredible journey ever since then. This morning, unfortunately, Pastor Tim and Carrie are not here. They got asked to go speak at a marriage conference this weekend. And while we always miss them being here, mainly because you get stuck with me for the day, it's always a blessing for us to be able to send them out and let them go kind of share some of the wisdom and lessons that God has taught them in their time here with other churches and other congregations and other people. And so they love you and miss you and say hello from them. Make sure you welcome them back or put some stuff on their Facebook or whatever. Let them know you miss them and that I did an amazing job. If you can go and do that now, that'd be great. No. This week is one of our last weeks of our Royal series. It's been an incredible series. I hope you've enjoyed as much as we have doing it. Pastor Tim's had some incredible messages for us as to what this means to be royal and some of the things we can pull from that. As we were kind of getting ready for this week, Christine and I kind of started talking about, like, what are some things that we think of when we think of royalty? What are some images? What are some traits? What are some things that we think about? And for us, maybe it's just the way we think, but this right here is actually the first thing I think about. I think of the crown. When I think of kings and queens and prince and princesses, I think of crowns. I think of these big, gaudy, gold crowns with jewels adorning them. It's the most noticeable identifier a royal can wear. It's not clothing, it stands out. If you see someone wearing a crown, they're crazy or they're royal, right? It's really about the only two options you see someone walking around doing that. It's a quick identifier. There's no mistaking that that person is royal when they wear that crown. It's funny, our kids, having two little kids, a five-year-old little girl and a three-year-old little monster, I think he's a boy, he might be bear, I'm not really sure. It's between those two and just the fact that we are obsessive Disney fans in our home. We have a lot of crowns and tiaras around our house, all right? Just is what it is. We all wear them from time to time. We all play with them. It's fun games. Don't judge me. I see the judgment in your face. Stop it, all right? It's what we do. It's fun and we play. And I brought some of them because it's funny. Bella wouldn't let me bring her good ones, so we just kind of brought some of the other cheaper ones. Except for this one. This was her first one that she got. But it's funny, especially with her tiaras. Her identity changes the second she puts one of those on, right? But specifically with her tiaras, when she first started getting into the expensive hobby of being a princess, right? She had a different tiara for different princesses. And so, you know, she puts the blue one on and she's Cinderella, the yellow one she's Belle, the pink she's Aurora, or what have you. And don't mistake her for someone else, right? The crown determines her identity, all right? Whichever one she has on it, that's what she is. And Reagan's similar, except he doesn't play with crowns, okay? However, he does have this. And when Reagan puts this on, there is no mistaking what he has become. It doesn't look that different sometimes, but he stops talking and just mostly growls, and his destruction goes to a whole new level. And sooner or later, I have to remove it from him so that he'll go back to being just a destructive boy instead of a destructive bear so that we don't have to sell the house and buy a new one, right? But it's funny how quickly they identify with the crown they wear. It's funny how quickly that becomes their identity. And we started thinking about this. We started thinking about the identity that comes with the crown. And so we started talking about royalty. We started talking about Old Testament kings. And one of the things that quickly came to our attention was the weight of that crown. The burden and the stress, the responsibility that comes with those who wear it. I mean, think about that. Think about being the king of a kingdom or multiple kingdoms. You are the end-all be-all. There's no Congress, there's no Senate, it's you. You choose whether there's war or peace. You choose how the people are treated. You imagine the weight of the crown they wear. So as we thought about this, a phrase was brought to my attention. I remember the phrase, but we didn't know where it was from. So thank God for Google. We figured it out. And it's actually from a Shakespeare play, King Henry IV. And in King Henry IV, he became king by overthrowing or assassinating the king before him. And in this middle of this moment, he's come to a place of almost regret because the weight of the throne, the weight of the crown is becoming too much for him to bear. And he begins to wonder, maybe I shouldn't have even come here. Maybe I shouldn't have done this. Maybe I shouldn't have put this on. Maybe this identity is too much for me. And tired, sick, guilty, and beset by rebellion, King Henry, feeling the weight of it all, says this, and we're just going to summarize it. He says, "While even the vile, the poorest, the most wicked of my realm, after hours of drudgery, can in their loathsome beds get a good night's sleep, yet I, a king, cannot." He goes on to say, "The wet sea boy perched high on a mast, amid wind and waves, nods off easily, while quiet nights on a royal couch bring no rest for poor King Henry." And he closes it by saying this, "Uneasy lies the head that wears the crown." Concerning the weight he's carrying, the burden he's bearing, he says, "Uneasy lies the head that wears the crown." Restless, burdened lies the head that wears the crown, not because of the physical weight, but the responsibility, the stress and the worry that comes with it. And I started thinking about that, and I immediately went to two Old Testament examples of David and Solomon, probably the most widely spoken of kings in the Old Testament, a father and a son. Both had different beginnings and different ends to their life, but they both faced struggles, they both faced success. They both wore the weight of the crown differently. They both identified with the crown differently. But there's some special lessons that I think we can learn from them this morning, because the reality is this. While we may not be royal in the way they are, we can relate to the struggle. Let's just say this. If you have any stress in your life right now, raise your hand. If you have a teenager in this room, raise your hand. Same thing. It doesn't matter what the stress is, right? If you didn't raise your hand, you're not paying attention, or you're that person who refuses to participate like my dad, and that's okay, I'm not gonna judge you, all right? But we all can relate to stress. If you can't, let me know the secret, right? But we can all relate to stress. We can all relate to worry. And so considering this and looking at them, the reality is that a lot of you come in here with a heavy burden this morning. And so we ask, how do you carry the weight of the crown? Do you battle with stress and anxiety, restlessness and fear? Some of you walk in here every Sunday completely burdened and completely bogged down, overwhelmed by worry and stress. If that's you, my hope is that by the end of this morning, you'll see that if that's your constant struggle with the weight of the crown, there's a better way to carry it. There's a better way to identify with it. Because you see, as we looked at Solomon, as we looked at King David in these particular moments of their life, we realized that the crown they chose to wear, or whatever it was they made their identity to be, it determined how they carried the weight. It determined how they reacted to the weight. It was all about their identity. It was about what they put their identity in. So I ask you this morning, where is your identity? Is it in your spouse, your family, your accolades, your job, your possessions? Is it in Christ? Where have you placed your identity? Because wherever you've placed it will determine how you carry the weight. It will determine how you handle the stress of life. So quickly, we want to look at a moment of Solomon and David's life. For Solomon, we know Solomon. Solomon was David's son. He was the son between him and Bathsheba. He was the son chosen to be king after David. And when he was crowned king, God said, "Ask me anything and I'll give you one thing." And he said, "God, give me wisdom." And he was given this unrealistic, unparalleled wisdom. And he spent his life chasing three things: wisdom, wealth, and pleasure. It says that he is the wisest and wealthiest person to ever walk the earth. It says he had over 700 wives, which makes me question the wisdom side. but I believe scripture, so we're going to go with it. But near the end of his life, something we see is that he turned from God. You see, amongst the 700 wives, the majority of them were not Jewish. And so in order to please them, he allowed temples to be built in honor of their gods. And then to further please them, he began to worship their gods, to sacrifice to their gods. And because of that, it says that his heart turned from God. Now, he ended turning back to God before he died. But he went through a season of departure that led to a season of despair. When considering all that he had accomplished, the wealth and the success, he wrote a lot of the book of Ecclesiastes. And in chapter 2, we see a realization as to where he placed his identity and why he had some of the struggles he did. He wrote this. He says, "I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me." So here's King Solomon. He's got sons. He's got wives galore. He's the wealthiest, wisest man. He said he's experienced wealth, wisdom, and pleasure like no one else to ever walk the earth and no one that will. And it says as he nears the end of his life, he realizes that he hates his toil. And the reason he hates what he's accomplished is because he realizes who's going to get it. He says, "I realize the one who will come after me." And you would think most dads would be pleased to pass on that legacy, those possessions to their kids. But this is why we see the struggle of his identity. Verse 19, "And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity." Verse 20, "So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labor under the sun." Verse 21, "Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil." Something we learn from his selfish struggle in this moment is that identity in the temporary brings despair. When we place our identity in things that are temporary, we will face despair. I love this. He says everything that he had obtained. Again, when he was chosen to be king, God said, "Ask anything, one thing." He asked for wisdom. He gave him wisdom. He used that wisdom to build a selfish kingdom full of his own accolades and pleasures. And when he realized that he would sooner or later have to die and couldn't take it with it, he said he gave his heart. Despair didn't take it. He gave his heart to hopelessness. Gave up care. It says that he gave his heart up to despair. I love the lessons we learn from our kids. If you just watch them, especially when they're younger. As they experience new things that they've never experienced before, and you watch what they experience and how they react, the lessons we learn are incredible. When we moved here 4 years ago, and I don't really know why the memory sticks out, but I know it does, and I know it's true. I remember one moment that we went to the mall to get Bella's shoes. And when we went to get her shoes, we bought her shoes, and they gave her a balloon. You ever seen this at the mall? Sometimes the stores will give little kids a balloon, like it's some gift or distraction. It's not really. It's something we deal with. But so it's crazy though, because if you have little kids, you understand this better than anyone. It's insane how quickly they can attach themselves to a 25-cent piece of latex with helium in it, right? I mean, what that can mean to them is incredible. And so she took her balloon, and we got in the car, she took it home, and it becomes her prize and joy. She doesn't even remember that she bought new shoes or that she got anything else. She just has her balloon. And we get outside, and of course she wants to carry it. And you know what happens. Bye-bye, balloon. And slowly but surely it begins to float out of reach. And I'll never remember the look on her face. mainly because she went into straight, just phase 10 nuclear meltdown mode. You would have thought she lost her dog and she didn't even have a dog, right? But as she watched this balloon fade out of her reach, realizing that there's nothing I can do to get it back, she just loses it. Now, thankfully, she was 2 and we gave her a snack and she was okay after that. But I'll never forget that moment. Because consider that your identity is that balloon. That everything you've worked for, everything you've achieved, everything that you've put worth and faith in your life is as fleeting as that balloon. Now, without a second's moment, notice, gone. This was the realization of Solomon. He says, I've grown to hate my toil. I've given my heart to hopelessness because it's going to be taken from me without control. And I don't know what's going to happen to it. I think it's easy to see where his identity was. For Solomon, the weight of his crown was determined by the identity he chose, by the fact that he chose to pursue personal gain over the pursuit of a personal God. And because of that, he faced despair. He goes on throughout the book of Ecclesiastes to describe it as chasing the wind, an unattainable thing, pointless in nature. You see, when your identity is in something that can be taken away, despair and disappointment are always possible. If you're a car guy and you put all of your love and energy into a car, sooner or later you will face despair and disappointment. It will stop running, it will get wrecked, or you will have to sell it, and then it's in the hands of someone else, and you're left without it. If you put that into your home, the way we built this from the ground up, we designed it, we prayed over it, this is what God gave us, and then sooner or later you have to move and sell it, and then someone else lives in your identity, in your home, in your crown, you face disappointment. When you put your identity in a relationship other than that of Jesus Christ, you face the potential of despair and disappointment. Marriage is a miracle. My parents were here last service. They've been married for over 40 years now. It's amazing. My mom's parents, over 50 years. My dad's parents, over 50 years. It's amazing. You put two sinners in a home together for the rest of their life, and the fact they don't kill each other is only because of God. It's true. You're going to disagree. You're going to fight from time to time. C.S. Lewis said it best. He said, to love at all is to be vulnerable. To love anyone that is sinful or fleshly is to open yourself to the possibility of disappointment. Marriages can succeed because God is in the marriage. So even in the midst of a disappointment, God is there because my identity is not in my wife. I love her with all that I have, but she's not my identity. My identity is only in that which is eternal. I cannot count in our 10 years of ministry how many students and how many adults have counseled who put their identity into a relationship. And when that relationship ended, shockingly at age 16, where we get a call from a student from 10 years ago who is in their mid-20s and that relationship ends. They moved to go be with that person. They gave up their hopes and dreams to go be with that person. I can't count the amount of times I've heard this phrase. It's as if I don't know who I am anymore. Because their identity was in something perishable, something temporary. Listen to me. David was different. Solomon struggled with this, especially towards the end of his life, but David was different. David saw it differently. He wore it differently. We see it like this in Psalm 23, verses 4 through 6. We see a great peril of David's life just referenced. It's debated actually what's going on in his life, but we know what his response was nevertheless. And he says this in Psalm 23, starting in verse 4. He says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and thy staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. And I will remain in the house of the Lord forever. I love this. See, Solomon, because his identity was in the temporary, he faced toil, he faced trial, he faced despair. But when our identity is in the eternal, we are promised peace. We are promised the potential for peace. When our identity is in something that cannot be moved, cannot be shaken, cannot be erased, there's no need for worry. This is what David's saying. I love even just how he says it. He calls death a mere shadow. It can't touch me. It's just the image of a threat. It can't affect me. It can't harm me. It's a shadow. He said, I was faithful before the crown. If you take it away, that's fine, because I will never lose my Lord. Take my life, take my family, take what you will. You cannot take my God. I love the words he uses here. He says this, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. If you have your Bible or if you're taking notes, I want you to circle or write down the words walk through, because this is key. See, David understood that because of who his identity was, and he understood the purpose and the meaning of life, he realized this. We're not supposed to live in the valley. The valley is not our resting place. You're not supposed to tweet from the valley or live in the valley or take selfies in the valley. It's just a temporary place. It's something you walk through on the way to the next mountaintop. It's temporary. It's only a moment. And because of that, you have to pay attention to that word, even though I walk through. The only way to move past it is to walk through it. He wasn't waiting for God to push the eject button and start over. His peace, the peace David had, was not in this promise of escape. It was in the promise of God's presence through the struggle. It's kind of like this. We got to take our kids to Disney World last summer. And the first time Bella went, we made the mistake at 2 years old of letting her ride this ride called Pirates of the Caribbean, and it scared the daylights out of her, and she didn't ride another ride. And this year, they both got this bug in their mind that they wanted to ride this ride called Haunted Mansion. Whether you know it or not, just pay attention to the word haunted and the fact that our kids were 5 and 2, okay? It doesn't sound like a setup for success, right? But they were dead set on going, so we said, okay. So, but you have to understand one thing. Once you start to walk through it, you have to finish it. There's no eject button for us to get out of it. We're not going to take an emergency exit. Once you step into it, the only way out of it is to walk through it or to remain in it. David says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. Because he is with me. His rod and staff, they comfort me. His protection comforts me. His direction comforts me. He says, even better yet, I know that not only does he protect and comfort and direct me, he prepares a table for me before my enemies. When our identity is in the eternal, peace is obtainable. It's not even just obtainable, folks, it's promised. Because God's desire is not that we live in the valley, that we walk through it. Our peace is not in the escape, it's in God's presence in the midst of it. Psalm 35 says, for his anger is but for a moment and his favor for a lifetime. Weeping may tarry for the night, but joy comes in the morning. John 14:27, Jesus says, peace I leave you, My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. You see, David, even in the face of pure loss, even in the face of the possibility of losing everything, including his life, Solomon was just in the realization that he's not going to be able to take his wealth to the grave. And he said, enough's enough, vanity, vanity. I give myself over to despair. David, when facing the loss of his life, of everything on this earth, said, I don't fear a thing. Because where my identity lies is in my Lord, and I cannot lose my Lord. He is with me. Truly, grace and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will rest. I will live. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. When our identity is in the eternal, the crown of life is obtainable. James 1, verse 12, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life. He will receive the crown of life. In the season of Solomon's life, his identity was in his pursuits. His pursuit of wisdom, of wealth, of pleasure. The thought of those things being his downfall, or the thought and the realization of those things being left with someone else, was just a guarantee that he had no control over it. That sooner or later it would be out of his hands. And he feared losing all he had gained. He did. Because of his departure from God, God spoke to him one last time before he died and said, I'm going to take it all. He said, not in your time, not in your time, but in your son's. Take it all. And sure enough, when Rehoboam took over, it says that he didn't listen to the counsel of the elders. He didn't listen to the counsel of those who had walked with David, who had walked with Solomon, who had gone this way before. Instead, he listened to the counsel of his friends that he grew up with. And so he tightened the rein on his kingdom, and he tightened the rein on his people. He said, you think you were punished by my father? I'll punish you with scorpions. He said, I'll just raise the heat. And he lost everything. Well, almost. God said, I will take all but one kingdom. And here's the reason I'll leave that kingdom: in memory of the faith of your father, David. Fathers, listen to me. Listen to me. You set the course of success for your family. David chose his identity in the eternal, knowing that even if you take my crown, it doesn't matter. And because he remained faithful, even in the turning destruction of his son, God still blessed that family in the next generation. He said, I'll take it all except for one kingdom, and know that that one kingdom is not because of you, it's because of the faith of your father. In his memory, I leave you one. Instead of placing our faith in that which can fade away, we must place our faith in the Father who is forever. Many of us find ourselves this morning in need. We find ourselves in the depth of the valley, feeling the shadow over us, the weight of the crown bearing down on us. We find ourselves in need. We find ourselves backs against the wall, knowing that we cannot get through this on our own. I love verse 1, Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Simple phrase. Because the Lord is my shepherd. Because the Lord is my God. Because the Lord is my rock. Because the Lord is where I place my identity, I shall not want. He says, I will lack nothing. See, our shepherd is sufficient for everything we need. When it comes to what you need to walk through the valley, his supply is sufficient. His protection, his provision is sufficient. When it comes to what you lack to find peace and joy and purpose, our shepherd is sufficient. David says, my shepherd Because of him, I will want nothing. In fact, he'll make me lie down in green pastures. He'll take me to still waters. Even when the shadow of death, because it's only a mere shadow, it can't touch me because I rest eternally with God. But I don't fear it. Because his rod and staff, his correction, his protection, his direction is with me. That his rod and his staff, that was what the shepherd used to correct, protect, and direct the sheep. They start going to the right, he just nudged them back to the left. When an enemy came on, that was what he had to defend. He said, because his rod and staff were with me, I don't fear it. I know he's with me. He's not only with me, he's gonna make a table for me before my enemies. Surely mercy and grace will follow me the remainder of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Because my identity is in something that cannot be removed, that cannot be taken away. And his provision is sufficient. He says, I will lack nothing. It's easy to sit and think, Luke, that sounds a lot like this thing I've heard. I don't really know much about it, but I've heard called the prosperity gospel. I assure you this, it's not the prosperity gospel, it's just the promise of the gospel. It's the promise of God's provision and protection to those who faithfully follow him. He doesn't say, I'll give you every desire and want of your life. He says, I will give you what you need. When you find yourself in the depth of the valley, if you call out to me, I will give you what you need. James 1:5, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God who gives generously to all without reproach. And it will be given to him. Church, what do you need this morning? Consider the weight of your crown. When you consider the depth of the valley you're in at the moment, what do you need? Do you need to finally have an identity? Do you need to finally place your identity, your life, your claim in a Lord that is eternal? Do you need to finally surrender that to him for the first time? It's not about being raised in church. It's not about being baptized as a baby. It's about coming to a place as an understanding person of claiming Jesus as your King and Lord, as your Savior, placing belief and faith and trust in him, placing your identity in him. Is that what you need? So he says, ask. Does anyone, who places their faith in me will be saved. Just ask. Maybe what you need is community. Maybe you realize that you've been walking alone for far too long. And what you need is community. To ask. We weren't designed to dance alone. We weren't designed to walk alone or to live alone. Therefore, if we ask for God to surround us with help and support and community, I assure you he will. If you find yourself in a black chair in need of community, I assure you it's available. Between ministries like Celebrate Recovery, our life groups, our men's and our women's, our Fuse for teenagers, our The Zone for elementary age kids, community is available. Just ask. Maybe you're in need of peace or rest or comfort. Maybe you just need help carrying it. Ask. He says, surely if an earthly father will give what his son needs, surely the heavenly father will give in abundance. Surely I will provide even more. I love in Matthew 11, and we'll close with this. Jesus says, come to me. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I love, he says, take my yoke and learn from me. And if you're taking notes, if you have your Bible open, circle that learn from me. This is something I didn't notice for a long time. I understood the yolk part. I got he wasn't talking about an egg, okay? My grandma's house growing up, she had an old ox yoke on their back porch. That was an antique. And so I understood it. It was this big wooden thing that strapped to the oxes, and it's what the oxes used to bear the weight and to pull the wagon or to pull the plow. And the thing I always remembered about it, there was space for two. And Jesus says, come to me, all who were burdened and heavy laden. He says, take my yoke upon you. A yoke still requires work and effort. He doesn't say, go sit in my hammock and take a nap. He knows, take my yoke upon you. We got some work to do. We're going to get through this. We're going to walk through the valley, not sit in the middle of it. But he says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. We can't learn from him unless he's next to us. We can't learn from him unless he's walking with us. The teacher doesn't say, learn from me, and then leave the classroom for the rest of the day. Dad doesn't say, let me teach you how to ride a bike and hand you YouTube. He takes you out there and holds on to you until you're ready to go on your own, never being too far away. Because for all who are burdened and heavy laden, he says, take my yoke and learn from me. Learn from me as we walk out of the valley together. Learn from me as we put one foot in front of the other and walk through the struggle together. It's not about waiting for the eject button or the emergency escape. It's about the promise of God's presence in the midst of the struggle. You can't get out of the valley unless you can't carry the weight alone unless you ask for help. Church, what do you need this morning? You consider it all. Whatever weight your family's carrying, whatever burden is in your marriage, whatever worry you have over your kids, what do you need? Do you need an identity? He says it's here. He says, my will, my desire is that all would know me and be saved. No one was designed for hell. Hell was not created for us. He says, my will is that you will find me. My desire is that you will find me, that you will know me, that you will place your identity in me, the eternal, the only thing that cannot be taken from you. You need community. Peace. You need rest. You need help. Whatever it is, many of you lack, ask the one who gives. Ask the one who listens. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open. He says, come to me. He does not desire destruction or failure for Don't walk away and face a difficult moment and think that Luke lied or the Bible's a myth. He says you will face trial. Perfect peace is not on this side of heaven. The difference is not what you face, it's how you make it through it and how you come out on the other side of it. The difference with me when I face despair in my life compared to a friend of mine who denies God is not that I face it and he doesn't or that he does and I don't. It's the fact that I can walk through it knowing no matter what is taken from me in this earth, I will be rejoined within heaven and my Lord will never leave me and he will never go from me. And I find peace in that. I find peace in that promise. And anything else I lack in the middle of that journey, I know that my shepherd is sufficient. Because I do not fear the shadow of death. Because my Lord is with me. Church, whatever you need, I'm going to ask you to lay that burden, to lay that worry at the foot of the cross, and to ask